It's July 14th, 1994. Detective Paul Manzella sits across the interview table from Pablo Ibar. Pablo had been arrested just hours earlier in a vicious home invasion in Miami-Dade County. But Manzella is here for another reason. He's investigating the brutal home invasion and triple murder that happened 3 weeks earlier in Miramar, Florida, the Casey's Nickelodeon murders that left Butch Casey, Sharon Anderson, and Marie Rogers dead. A photograph made from a surveillance video from Butch's house showed the face of one of the Miramar killers. Manzella thinks he looks like Pablo Ibar. For 20 minutes, he peppers his suspect with questions. Where were you the night of the murders? Out clubbing with a friend, Pablo says. Then with my girlfriend, Latasha. Manzella presses for more details, according to testimony. What's your girlfriend's last name? I don't know. Her phone number? I don't know. Where does she live? I don't know. Were you involved in these murders? No. Manzella pulls out the photo from the surveillance video and holds it up in front of the suspect. Then where did I get this photo of you, Pablo? Detective Manzella later describes the moment in an interview with MSNBC. He says Pablo looked at the photo for a moment, then he laid his head down on the table.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
From the Sun Sentinel and SouthFlorida.com, in association with Wondery, this is Felonious Florida, the podcast that leads you into the dark side of the Sunshine State. I'm Lisa Arthur, and this is the story of the Casey's Nickelodeon murders. Episode 3, The Faces of the Killers. The Miami-Dade home invasion that brought Pablo Ibar in front of Detective Manzella was violent, and the details were strikingly similar to the method used by the killers in the Casey's Nickelodeon case. Here's Hilliard Moldoff, an attorney who will later represent one of the suspects in the Miramar case.
And we were able to show that that home invasion in Dade County was just like ours. They come in with nothing other than a gun or two and a bat, which is just like our case. One guy has a gun, one guy has a stick. And they go in that house in Dade County, same way, tie them up with things they find in the house, like belts and cord, telephone cords, just like ours, tie them all up, threaten to kill them, just like they did there, beat the shit out of them. You could see it happening. And they had a can of gasoline in the Camaro they drove there to burn the house or burn the car, burn something, just like they did in our case. You know, they had a can of gasoline to burn evidence.
Witnesses say it started with a pounding on the front door just after 2 o'clock in the morning on July 14, 1994. Here's what they say happened. A woman goes to the door. She asks, "Who is it?" The response, "Alex, Alex Salazar." The woman knows Alex Salazar, who also goes by the name Alex Fernandez. He tells her he needs to come in, and she opens the door. She's known him for years, after all. Hernandez bursts in. He's carrying a bat. Alberto Rincon follows him, and he's got a shotgun. Then Pablo Ibar comes through the door with a pistol. One of the invaders is wearing a ski mask to hide his face. Another has a shirt draped over his head. Alex Hernandez is yelling about money and searches the house. Somebody owes him money for drugs, he says. The invaders force the residents to the floor and tie them up. Pablo Ibar and Alberto Rincon stand watch over them. One of the women is pregnant and complains that she's uncomfortable. She asks if she can flip over and lie on her back. She later gives a sworn statement that Pablo grabbed a knife from the kitchen and threatened to cut her baby out. "You want to have a baby?" he said. "We'll have a baby right now." Alex Hernandez finds a briefcase with cocaine in it and explodes. He threatens to kill the people in the house. He demands his money. They show how serious they are. One of the invaders shoots and kills the family dog. While the home invaders deal with other residents of the house, a man is hiding in a bathroom and calls 911.
"I'm home advising, hiding in the bathroom. The guest can hear screaming in the background. The guest still has a complaint on the line. Supposedly home invasion, 5 Latin males, all armed with guns."
Police arriving at the scene hear gunshots and advance toward the house. The home invaders escape and scatter into the neighborhood. But police have cordoned off the surrounding streets and eventually corral all three suspects. Pablo Ibar is interrogated by police. The taped statement he gave that night is missing from the court file, according to the state attorney's office. But there's a transcript. Pablo tells investigators that the home invasion was a domestic dispute between Alex Hernandez and some relatives. Pablo says he wasn't even supposed to be there. Alex and the other suspect, Alberto Rincon, had run out of gas and called Pablo for help. He drove from Broward County with a gas can, picked them up, and took them to fill it. Alberto Rincon backs that story up, and he says he was only there to help Alex, who had a problem with the people in the house. During the next few weeks, detectives working the Casey's Nickelodeon murder zero in on Pablo Ibar, Alex Hernandez, and their drug-addled circle. One of those acquaintances will lead police to the man they believe is the second killer seen on the video from the Casey's murders. He will become a star witness in the high-profile murder trial of the two suspects, until he changes his story and helps turn the case upside down. Detective Manzella finishes questioning Pablo Ibar at the Miami-Dade police station that July afternoon and begins piecing together evidence. There was a bloody shoe print left on the floor of Butch Casey's dining room the morning he was murdered. So Manzella collects the shoes worn by Pablo and the two other men in custody in Miami-Dade. He's hoping for a match. He also takes Polaroid photos of the three. He suspects Alex Hernandez could be the second killer seen on the surveillance video, the one whose face was hidden by a ball cap and sunglasses. Detectives use the Polaroids to create two sets of photo lineups. They bring them to Gary Foy, an eyewitness they found after the murders. Foy lived a few doors down from Butch Casey on East Shore Road. When the bodies of Butch, Sharon, and Marie were found the day after the killings, Foy approached Detective Craig Scarlett, who was in front of Butch's house investigating. He told Scarlett that as he drove by Sunday morning, he saw two men backing out of Butch Casey's driveway in Butch's car, the same Mercedes convertible later found engulfed in flames on the edge of the Everglades, 70 miles away. Gary Foy looked over the lineups of photographs. In the first set, labeled lineup A, Pablo Ibar's Polaroid was in the fifth slot.
Prior to going on tape, he had viewed a photographic lineup A, and were you able to identify anyone in that particular photograph to depict the same as the person that was occupying that Mercedes-Benz back on the 26th of June, 1994?
Well, there's six possible people here. Four I eliminated, I didn't think were at all. And then
which numbers did you eliminate?
2, 3, 4, and 6. And the two that I think resemble it are 1 and 5. And 5 looks more like him, but if I could see, I would like to see a picture of all from them, a reverse angle and a side angle showing the left side of the face. I could choose better, but if I had a choice, it would be either number 1 or number 5. And because I did see them from the side and the back, mm-hmm. from the left side, and you know, that's, you know, mainly what I saw. But I would say either number 1 or number 5.
If you were to be presented with a live lineup, mm-hmm. do you think you might be able to identify the person that you recalled to be in the Mercedes-Benz at the time?
It could be possible. I can't say definitely. I'd have to see it.
Gary Foyd doesn't recognize the photo of Alex Hernandez or anybody else in photo lineup B. They put together a live lineup a few days later, and Foy immediately identifies Pablo Ibar as the man he saw riding in the passenger seat of Butch Casey's Mercedes the morning of the killings. It's a start, but they need more. Detective Scarlett heads to the home of Pablo Ibar's mother, Maria Casas. Pablo told Detective Banzella that he had lived on and off at his mother's house, and he signed a form giving police permission to search his bedroom there. So they do, but the search turns up nothing. But they do turn up something from Pablo's own mother. Detective Scarlett shows Maria Casas the surveillance photo, the one that showed the killer exposing his face to Butch Casey's security camera. She says the man resembles her son. Two women who were visiting Maria at the time say the same thing, according to court records. Over the next 2 weeks, more evidence piles up that police decide points to Pablo Ibar. Test results come back on the sneakers Detective Manzella took from Ibar and the other two suspects in the Miami-Dade home invasion. The shoes that Alberto Rincon was wearing match the bloody shoe print left on Butch Casey's dining room floor. Rincon tells police he borrowed the shoes from Pablo Ibar. Detectives look into a blue t-shirt that was found outside Butch Casey's front door, the door the killers used to leave the house. The shirt has blood on it. The blood matches Butch Casey's blood type in early tests, but there's no forensic evidence that ties it directly to Pablo. But there is something. The logo on the shirt is for a company called Consolidated Electric Supply, and they had a relationship with the place that Pablo's mother worked.
It was always a problem, though, because it's a Consolidated Electric shirt. His mom worked for this electric company, or a lighting company, that they brought in the owner of the Consolidated Electric, who said, I gave these shirts to this lighting company as like a advertising gimmick, you know?
The case against Pablo Ibar seems to be falling into place. But leads on the second killer on the video remain elusive. Enter John Clemesco, a one-time roommate of Pablo Ibar. He blows the case wide open.
I'm going to show you a photograph, or the same photograph I showed you yesterday, being the 27th of July at your residence. And I'm going to show you the one pictured on the, maybe the left first. With a face exposed. Do you know who that is?
Yes.
Who is that?
Pablo Ibar.
Okay, now I'm going to show you the other picture of the person with a hat on. Who is that?
Seth Pantlevin.
Okay. And last night, when I showed you this picture, did you have any problem identifying either one of these people in this picture?
No.
Okay. You made a mention, or a mention to me, the type of picture this was similar to what?
Your book picture is perfect.
Okay, so you had no qualms knowing this person for how many years?
Known him from being around and seen him for like 5 years at least.
Okay, and that's the same with this other photograph of the person without any cover on his face.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm going to have you do is use this same particular photo flyer that I have here. And I'm going to have you again initial like you did the last photograph, set of photograph I show you, with your initials and date of birth on both photographs, please.
Seth Pentlover. That's what he said when he identified the photo of the killer in the sunglasses and ball cap caught on Butch Casey's surveillance camera. P-E-N-T-L-O-V-E-R. Not Penalver. P-E-N-A-L-V-E-R. Clemesco's mistake will haunt the prosecution 2 decades later and help convince a jury to acquit Seth Penalver of murder and set him free.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
Polonius, Florida is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Posting your position to job sites and waiting for the right people to see it? ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidate for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Florida. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Florida. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. ZipRecruiter.com/Florida. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. John Clemesco has given detectives a name for the mysterious second killer. But he's got more than just a name as he describes what he saw at the home on Lee Street in Hollywood. That's where he was staying with Pablo Ibar and Alex Hernandez. He puts a Tech-9 machine gun in the hands of Pablo Ibar and Seth Penalver on the morning of the triple slaying. It's the same kind of gun used to murder Butch Casey, Sharon Anderson, and Marie Rogers.
So Saturday evening, you stay home. You know the Pablo goes out. Who does he go out with?
He went out with Seth that night.
Okay, do you have a car?
Yeah, Burgundy Olds.
Burgundy Olds. You know who owns that car?
Yes, Seth.
Seth does. Okay, you know, it's a two-door or a four-door?
Two-door.
Okay. Do you know where they may have gone to?
I don't know. I thought they were going to Crossroads.
When they left, do you remember what they may have been wearing, starting with Pablo Ibar?
No.
Was he wearing light clothes or dark clothes?
I can't remember anything at all what they were wearing. I'm not even going to try to lie.
Okay. If you don't remember, you don't remember. Okay, and you said that Pablo came back?
Yeah, Pablo and Seth came back.
They both came back? Did they both come into the house?
Yeah.
At what time was that?
About 5 o'clock, I think.
Okay, 5 o'clock in the morning being Sunday.
Right.
Now the 26th.
Right.
Okay. For what purposes did they come back?
They came in and they were acting real funny and stuff, kind of paranoid or whatever, and then they took, Pablo grabbed the Tech-9 and they left.
Okay, when you say they were acting funny and paranoid, what
was it? Just like moving around fast, and they probably, I thought they were high on powder, cocaine, whatever. That's what I thought, that's the way they were kind of acting.
Okay, and Pablo took the Tech 9?
Yeah.
Okay, where did he take it from?
Under his bed.
His bed, okay. So he takes his Tech 9 and goes back outside. Did Seth leave with him?
Yeah.
Was anyone else with him?
Never, so no.
Okay, and they left in the burgundy car again?
Yeah.
You don't know if there's any other car with them or any other person
no.
at that time?
No.
Were you awake and in the living room? Where were you when you saw them leave?
I was just looking out the window to see them back out in the burgundy car.
And then you don't know where they went.
No.
When was the next time you saw Pablo or Seth?
Early that morning, about 7 o'clock, they pulled up. I just saw Seth's car pull up, and then I saw a black car, a dark colored car, a newer car, new model car pull up behind them. I thought I saw more than just two people, but I wasn't sure. And I thought it looked like a detective car or something. I don't know what kind, just a big, nice new car. And I looked out and I thought that maybe they were getting in trouble or whatever, but then they were just switching up drivers or something, and then they just both left again. And both the cars didn't even come in or anything.
Okay. Who drove the maroon car back to the house?
I didn't see him. I just heard him pull up. I seen him, like, when I looked out the window, the two cars were parked and they were standing out of the car. It looked to me like there was more than two people, but I was like, I was dozed off. I was sleeping, so I was like, my eyes were blurry. I couldn't really see that good. Might have been just two of them. It looked like it could have been more, though, but I know Seth got in his car and drove, and Pablo got in a black car and drove.
A day or two after the Casey's murders, John Klimesko left the Lee Street house. He described the scene at the house to Detective Manzella, who tries to establish that the guys all wore each other's clothes and shoes.
At this particular house, you said that they were doing things that you didn't want to get involved in at this point. And were they doing it by themselves? Were there anybody else involved doing it that you're aware of?
Well, just ones who were living there, Seth and Alberto. Alex, Pablo, Seth, Alberto.
Okay, who's Seth?
He's another friend of ours.
Okay, do you know his last name?
Pentlover.
Pentlover? Do you know how to spell that?
P-E-N-T-L-O-V-E-R.
Okay, and what does he look like?
White Hispanic male.
Okay, about how tall?
5'6", 150, 160.
Okay, do you have any kind of noticeable scars, marks, or tattoos that you're aware of?
Yeah, tattoo, but I don't remember what or where.
Okay. And did he live in that house also?
No, he was there quite a bit.
Quite often? Okay. You have how many guys in the house? Three? Did y'all have each a separate room?
No, I slept on the couch. Pablo and Alex had their own room.
Okay. What about clothes? Where did you put your clothes while you were there?
In the trunk of Alberto's car. I left some in Pablo's room where we were laying around, really.
Okay. Did anyone else wear your clothes while you were there?
It's possible.
Okay. Did you wear anybody else's clothes while you were there?
Yes.
Okay. What about shoes or hats or?
Yes, whatever.
Okay. Shoes. If your foot fit into the shoe, you would wear it.
Yeah.
And clothes, the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know if Pablo had ever interchanged clothes with Alberto Rincon?
Sure, it's happened, but I mean, I couldn't cite a specific case. It's not something. You pay attention to it.
What else did you see going on at that particular house that you didn't want to get involved in?
Drug dealing and drug use, things like that.
Okay, anything involving credit cards or cellular phones?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Just a lot of fraudulent use of credit cards and hooking up cellulars, you know, pirate cellular phones.
How are they doing that?
Through some computer they have, but I don't know how they did it.
John Klimesko's statements were not rock solid. Again, he said Seth Pentlover, not Seth Penalver. Klimesko was a convicted felon who had only been out of prison for a month, and he seems to be holding a grudge against Pablo Ibar and the rest of the Lee Street crew. He had a falling out with Pablo, who kicked him out after accusing Klimesko of stealing money from a safe in the house. Then, a few nights after he left Lee Street and moved in with his mother, a car drove by and shot into her house at 5 in the morning. He claimed to be sure it was Pablo Ibar, and later he testified he thought Seth Penalver was involved too. Miramar Police Detective Ray Black seems to be skeptical of John Klimesko's statement and presses him. Klimesko's answers will raise doubts about the identification for years to come.
John, are you sure about the subject with the hat and the glasses? As sure as you are about the other subject?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure there's people who look like anybody. I'm sure you can find 100 people who look like that person, but out of all the people who hang out with them, That's the only one I know who looks like that, you know?
Okay. In this particular...
Y'all were trying to tell me that was Alex. As soon as I saw it, I knew that was. I knew that wasn't Alex.
Okay.
You all were trying to tell me that was Alex. I knew that wasn't Alex. That's what Clemesco says on the tape statement. Did police try to suggest to him that the killer in the ball cap was Alex Hernandez before they began taping him? After talking to Clemesco, detectives figure out Seth Pentlover is actually Seth Penalver, and they begin zeroing in on him. They announce to the media that Seth is a person of interest in the Casey's Nickelodeon murders. The story is splashed across newspapers and television news. On August 5th, 1994, Seth turns himself in.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
At the time of his arrest, he was staying at the home of an ex-girlfriend, Melissa Monroe. Detectives get a warrant to search Melissa's house and hope she, too, will identify Seth Penalver as the killer with the ball cap and sunglasses. They get that and more.
Earlier this morning, or late last night, I recall having a conversation with Detective Menzel and myself from Miramar Police Department.
Yes.
And at that time, do you recall being shown two photographs?
Yes.
And for the record, would you indicate to us what names you placed to the individuals depicted in the photograph?
The left photograph is Pablo Ivar, and the right photograph is Seth.
And did you, in fact, sign and date the back of the photograph at that time?
Yes.
Then she tells Detective Black that she saw Seth Penalver and Pablo Ibar the night of the murders. At Butch Casey's nightclub, Casey's Nickelodeon, the same place Butch ran into the other murder victims, Sharon Anderson and Marie Rogers.
Around the time of the homicide occurring, did you have any contact? Did you see either Seth or Pablo?
Yes, I saw them at Casey's on the Sunday, Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Okay, would that be Sunday morning of June
26, 1994? I guess so. I don't know the absolute date. I don't know the correct date.
Okay, Saturday night for Sunday morning. Well, this coincided when the homicides, the weekend prior to the homicides,
yes,
Being reported to the news?
Yes.
Okay, and what were the circumstances in which you saw them at Casey's? What were you doing?
I went there with some coworkers after work, and I saw both of them there, said hello, talked to them for a few minutes, and went back about my business.
Do any of these persons know Seth or Pablo?
No.
Okay. Approximately what time did you arrive at Casey's Nickelodeon on Sunday morning?
Somewhere between 5 and 5:30.
And where were you coming from?
From work, from Pickles.
And do you recall what time you may have left Casey's Nickelodeon that morning?
Last call, when it was last call.
And approximately how much time do you recall staying or being at the bar prior to that time? Was it more than an hour, less than an hour?
Less than an hour.
When you got there, Seth and Pablo were both in the bar, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and did you have any contact with them in the bar?
Yes.
And can you describe what that was?
I talked to him when I was on the dance floor, and he kept asking me to dance, and then finally I danced with him.
Is this Seth or
Seth, yeah, Seth. And when that was it, after we danced, I went back with my friends, and that was the last I spoke with him. And I didn't speak with Pablo, I just said hello to him, and that was it.
Can you, the best you can you recall what either one, what both subjects, Pablo and Seth, were wearing that night, that morning?
Pablo, I have no idea. Seth, if I remember right, was wearing a dark colored dress shirt, buttoned down with a collar. But I couldn't tell you the color or if it was long sleeve, short sleeve, I don't remember. And I don't remember his pants or anything else.
Did he have pants on, shorts?
Pants that I can remember, but I'm not sure.
Do you recall what type of shoes Seth may have been wearing that morning?
No.
Did you have any conversation with Seth or Pablo during that time?
At Casey's?
Yes. Were you surprised to see them at Casey's?
Yes.
How often have you gone into Casey's the past, say, 6 months? How often
was that? That was the first time in the last 6 months that I've been here.
So you're not, you wouldn't have any information concerning whether or not Seth or Pablo had been in there any prior time during that period?
No.
Did Seth or, did you have any conversation with Pablo?
No.
Did Seth tell you what he was doing there at the bar? Or?
He was just hanging out.
Melissa told police that when Seth saw the newspaper story that police wanted to talk to him about the triple murder, he freaked out.
About Thursday last week, you recall speaking to Seth about an article in the newspaper?
Yes.
Okay, tell us about that.
He was all excited and frantic because his name was in the newspaper and he was wanted for questioning for these three murders, and he was upset and he retained a lawyer.
When you say he was upset, how upset was he?
Very, he was very upset to the point where he wanted to give his own life up.
Can you remember the specific words he used to tell you that?
No, I want to kill myself.
Did he say in which manner he was going to do that?
No.
Did you ask him why he wanted to kill himself?
Yes.
Did he go into any reasons?
He just said, because look at my life. Look how my life is. I have nothing, and now because of this, you know, I'm never going to have a life.
Did he talk about the incident or any information in the newspaper in any detail?
No.
Did you ask him any questions about the murders as they were described in the newspaper or on television?
Yeah, I asked him if he did it. He said no.
Police believe they've put together a solid case. They have the surveillance videotape. They have what seems like a parade of witnesses. The witnesses ID the men on the video as Seth Penalver and Pablo Ibar. They put both men in Casey's Nickelodeon hours before the murders. They have Seth and Pablo with the same kind of machine gun used to kill the victims. They have Butch's neighbor placing Pablo in the passenger seat of Butch's Mercedes, driving away from the murder scene. And other witnesses say they see Seth and Pablo in a Mercedes during the hours after the murders. But what they don't have is physical evidence. Their fingerprints were not among those found in Butch Casey's house. There is no DNA linking them to the crime. Witnesses told police they saw the two in Seth's car wearing the blood-splattered clothes they had on during the murders, yet no traces of blood were found in his car. Still, it seemed like enough evidence to prosecutors and to a grand jury. In August of 1994, Pablo Ibar and Seth Penalver are indicted on charges of first-degree murder. But would the video and witness IDs be enough to convince a jury at trial? former Sun Sentinel reporter Margie Lambert.
When you have a video, and especially back then when videos weren't nearly as common, you think that that would be an open and shut case. But the quality of the photos was not that good, that maybe the identities weren't as sure as it first sounded like they were going to be.
Another Sun Sentinel reporter, Patinto Batts, says the video may have worked against prosecutors.
There's murders on that video. You can certainly see that happening. You can see that there's violence on that video. But what you could certainly question is the identity of the people in the video because of the quality of the video. And I think that that is why the defense attorneys have been able to make that case and present that reasonable doubt. And that's why this case is continuing to this day.
Many of the state's witnesses changed their testimony at trial. Seth's ex-girlfriend, Melissa Monroe, says police twisted her words and manipulated her before turning on the tape recorder. In fact, she testifies that she repeatedly told police she couldn't say who the men were in the photos. But they pressed her, she testified, and finally they told her, "We know this is Seth and Pablo, so if this is Seth and Pablo, which photo shows Seth and which photo shows Pablo?" Police deny this. John Klimesko has played the tape of his statements you heard earlier. He agrees that it's his voice describing the machine gun and the luxury black car he saw Seth and Pablo in the night of the murders. But he says he has no memory of the statement, and he doesn't remember the scene he described. What about the Miami-Dade home invasion that attorney Hilliard Moldoff described as strikingly similar to the Casey's home invasion, the one that led police to Pablo Ibar? Jurors never hear about it. Prosecutors don't bring it up, concerned it could be used in an appeal to overturn a conviction. The trial lasts 9 months as defense lawyers work to exploit the changing witness stories and lack of physical evidence. The jury of 12 deliberates for more than 25 hours, but struggles to reach a unanimous verdict. On January 25, 1998, 3 years and 6 months after the Casey's Nickelodeon murders, the trial of Pablo Ibar and Seth Penalver ends with a hung jury. The state would have to try again, and again, and again, and again. On the next episode of Felonious Florida, the Casey's Nickelodeon Murders. Seth and Pablo feud during the emotional legal roller coaster of the case. Damaging new evidence emerges straight from the bloody 1994 murder scene. And Pablo mounts $1 million legal defense, funded mostly by money flowing from thousands of miles away in Spain, where Pablo Ibar has become something of a local celebrity. Thanks for listening to this episode of Felonious Florida. If you're enjoying the podcast, please rate us on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends about our show. It's available at feloniousflorida.com, Apple Podcasts, Wondery.com, or your favorite podcast platform. You can go online to see photographs, video, and read more about the cases we're featuring at feloniousflorida.com. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Felonious Florida is produced by David Schutz, Lisa Arthur, and Juan Ortega. The Casey's Nickelodeon Murders is reported and written by your host, me, Lisa Arthur. Editing by David Schutz and Randy Rogoski. Sound engineering and production by Cindy Choi and Sean Pitts. The Felonious Florida team includes Danny Sanchez, Dana Banker, and David Selig. Hi, this is Lisa Arthur. If you'd like to support more journalism like this, you can help by joining the Sun Sentinel, South Florida's leading source for news, information, and entertainment. Visit sunsentinel.com/join.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Felonious Florida ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.